Hey guys, Jen's not here. The inmates are running the asylum. Greg, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, fantastic. How about you, Corey?
I'm hoping we make it through. All right, so episode 441. We got Eric Leopold. I learned how to say your name just now. How are you, buddy?
Am good, Corey. How are you, my man?
Oh, I can't complain. So jokes aside, I think we were talking before the show and we had met at the 2021 Rimfire finale. Is that right?
It would have been 2020. Two,
Two?
that was my, I'm just
Okay.
in. I'm in my second full season now. I had 4 or 5 matches under my belt when I shot that match. So,
Nice.
yeah. So
Very good.
2022 Nationals there. Yeah.
Well, cool. Well, how are you doing? I heard you shot a Rimfire match last weekend.
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. I shot a rimfire match last weekend. I've been shooting a few rimfire matches almost every weekend, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
I guess you're a longtime shooter. What did you start? What did you initially get into guns with? Tell people about you.
Yeah, so I grew up on a small farm in Florida, and I was always around guns and stuff. I never did anything competitive or anything like that, but fast forward through life, in 2012 I was married and had a 12-year-old and a 9-year-old, and my wife was at a gas station, and I was working for the fire department at the time, and she was we basically had a near abduction with her and my son. Luckily, she was aware of her surroundings. She knew something wasn't right. A fella came up and asked her if she could spare $5, and the gas station, you know how they have those ebb and flows where it's the whole gas station completely full and the next moment it's completely empty. So she just knew something wasn't right. She was the hair on her neck was standing up, and so she kind of kept an eye on the fella. And once the gas station was completely empty, she was the only car there, and they came zooming up on the other side of the pump, and the guy jumped out of the car and she jumped into her car and locked the door. Of course, the gas pump was still hooked to the car, so she didn't know what to do. She was panicking and started to call 911, and the manager of the gas station saw what was happening and he ran out there, and they jumped in the car and took off. But the guy was at the door jerking on the car door trying to get it open, trying to get her out. And so she ended up coming over to the firehouse, and I ended up having to leave that night to go home with her. And she said, "I want to get a concealed carry permit." So I thought that's a great idea. So we went and got it, and of course, like any other new concealed carry person, I was felt like there was a big neon sign pointing to my hips and gun, 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 you know. And
What's this giant lump on me now?
and I was, of course, I was worried, you know, if what happens if the gun jams, and you know, can I hit a bad guy if I need to? And so we decided to go take some lessons from the guy who gave us the concealed weapons class, and we were taking the lessons, and of course, I was holding a pistol. I'd never shot a pistol in my life, and I shot some rifles from hunting and was a bow hunter and things like that. But he gave us some basic lessons, and at the end of the lesson, he's like, "You know, have you ever considered doing any competition shooting?" And I had no idea what he was talking about, and so he showed me a little video of an IDPA shoot, and it just so happens there was a local club about an hour south of us, maybe, that had IDPA. So I searched them and found out that like the next Monday there was an IDPA match. So I went down there, and it turns out one of my chiefs from the fire department and three other firefighters were down there shooting. And
And
so
I never told you.
I showed up and I'm like, "Hey, chief, what are you doing here?" And he's like, "What are you doing here?" So I said, "Well, I'm just here to watch. I heard about this." And so he said, "Well, all right, you come back next Monday and I'm gonna bring everything you need." He said, "Just bring some 9mm ammo and you're gonna shoot." So the following Monday
Oh,
I
that's
came back, and
fantastic.
yeah, I was shooting IDPA, you know, a week later. So yeah,
Yeah,
that's kind of
benefits of
how it
being on
started.
Team Mustache.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay, IDPA is obviously a little bit faster paced, not much more than precision. I know you've done some other high speed stuff. You got into three gun at some point?
So I did IDPA for year and a half or so, and someone said, "Hey, man, you should try three gun." And I'm like, "Well, what's that?" So they explained it to me basically, and next you know, I was off and running with three gun, and I was pretty hardcore three gunner from 2013 ish until literally about a year ago. I ended up, you know, transitioning over here, but did a little bit of USPSA in that time. Mainly shot and open, did a little bit of limited and a handful of PCC matches just for fun and sponsor stuff. But
okay. So Florida, what part of Florida are you in?
So I was from Sarasota, which is just south of Tampa. Yeah. Right. So right in the middle of several big clubs in that area.
Yeah. I was going to say that's probably central to some of the biggest clubs in like the Southeast.
Oh yeah. 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 You got the WAC and, back then, Shannon Smith was running Universal and and Pants and Range down in Fort Moore, Punta Gorda area. And that's where I actually started, was at Pants and Range. So, so nice. Yeah, there's a lot of big ranges down there. And great shooters too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely, you can get your fix.
Oh goodness! Yeah, you could. Well, I joke that, you know, if you wanted, you could shoot between USPSA and IDPA. You could shoot every day of the week down there if you wanted, Monday through Sunday, you know, between some match if you're willing to drive a little bit.
Yeah. Greg, I might be tempted to leave Texas for that. Okay, so you gave up three gun last year, kind of picked up Rimfire 2022. How's that been going?
Been going real well. I you know, it's been a fairly quick progression, I think, for me. I'm not really where I want to be, but I've had some solid results, and you know, like any other sport and any other competitor, you have your ups and downs, but just trying to keep grinding through that. And I've like, this is what I consider my second full year. Like I said, I had, I think, five or six matches at the end of 2022 when I did the nationals there, when I saw you, but you know, it's been going well, and traveling around, hitting a lot of big matches, going all over the country. So,
okay. So mostly Rimfire. Why the transition to Rimfire instead of Centerfire? Just coming from three gun out of curiosity.
So to be honest, there's a few things there with that. The biggest thing was I was pretty burned out from reloading, and I know you know that. I mean, I had at the, I think in right before COVID, I think 2017, 18, 19, I think I was shooting in the 50 to 60,000 range a year round count between, you know, open, you know, nine major and 223, and of course loading multiple 223 calibers. And then I had a three gun round and a major round, nine major round for my pistol. And, you know, I just kind of got burned out with that, spending hours behind the 1050 and of course, trying to search for primers and search for powder. And so I kind of found the Rimfire by mistake, or by accident, I would say. I was actually going to the range to practice some long range with my 223 for three gun, and some buddies were there. And shout out to Willis and Sexton at the Clinton House. They kind of, And I pulled up. I'm like, what are you guys doing? Yeah, he's a good guy. They said, "Oh, we're shooting Rimfire," and I'm like, "That's silly, you know." And, they're like, I'm like, "Really? Okay, well, have fun with your 22, you know." And so they're like, "No, we're shooting this to 300 yards," and I was like, "Yeah, you're crazy." And they said, "No, here, it's dialed in. Try and shoot that 2/3 Zipsic out there." And I'm like, "Are you serious?" They're like, "Yeah, just hold left edge." And I'm like, "Okay." So I sent one, and of course, couple seconds later you hear this ping. You know, I was kind of hooked right there, and I didn't know the PRS game or the sport or anything like that, but I was like, man, this is kind of cool. So one thing led to another, and I ordered a Voodoo and got the Voodoo and was running a 1-6 optic on it for from an old three gun optic I had from US Optics. They were real US Optics. I've been shooting with them for 6 years now, and they've been super supportive of me. And they said, you know, "Hey, we can send you a 5 to 25 over for that. And so I was like, all right, cool. So
yeah, I gotta look the first part, match, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Nice. That 1 to 6 that people, I was getting some weird looks the first time I showed up with that. And, you know, I didn't know what a casserole was. We didn't use bags and 3-gun really, you know, at that time. I mean, they are a little bit now, but we didn't have, you know, game changer plates and all that stuff. So, yeah, it was just a, it was a neat changeover. And, you know, I went and took a class, and that's where I consider, like, the next match after that, I consider that my first match. And I finally had a casserole and had the bags I needed and had the correct optic. I was kind of 5 to 25 instead of a 1 to 6. It was, I was like, well, I don't understand why I can't shoot this 1 to 6. I shoot targets to 500, 600 yards and 3-gun with it all the time. And of course it was a little, it was a little different story. So I learned real quick why I couldn't use that, but
you know, you mentioned something about holding left edge at 300 of the 22. And I had a like nervous twitch frown because I wasn't even left edge with my center fire last weekend at 300.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's a little bit different, but yeah.
Yeah. Southeast, man.
Yeah.
Out there at Clinton House, you're good at the 300. You know, you'll have a somewhat okay-ish wind. It's when you start getting over 6, and then it starts going all 7 directions at once is when it starts getting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you get that swirl.
Mm-hmm.
That place can be tricky for sure. Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So you're a member of the a new team from MPA. The Rimfire team. When that start, and why'd that start, and who all's on it, and how's that experience been for you?
That's been an excellent experience. That's super proud to have been asked to join that team. And that was, we're a new team, like you said, and it was started at the first of the year. It was in the works a little bit before that. And there's, for those who don't know, Masterpiece Arms is coming out with the new Rimfire Elite, and it is basically, it's a Voodoo 360, and with the Masterpiece Arms branding on it, and so those are going to be some really sweet rifles that are going to be, you know, definitely reliable guns and things like that that we can use, anybody can use at any level you want, really. So I'm thinking that was the driving force behind the team starting. As far as I know, I can't speak 100% to that, but I think that's where it was headed. And there was 10 guys that were chosen to be on the team. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to be one. I'm super proud of that. And we got a couple of decent guys on the team. So, it you know, it was an honor to be picked with those guys for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a few like little notable accomplishments, you know, IPRF team captain or co-captain. What's that Simmons guy do? He's got a thing, world champion or something.
I think he just lives back in the woods with his dog, man.
Shooting cans of beans.
Yeah. We got a pretty good representation. We got, you know, I think we got 2 guys from Michigan, 1 from Wisconsin, 2 from Kentucky, 2 from Georgia, 1 from North Carolina, 1 from South Carolina. I know I'm forgetting a couple in there, but we got a few guys around that, you know, pretty good representation across north to south. So. Yeah.
And all just astronomical shooters and great people.
Yeah. I think that, like I said, that's the coolest thing is, like you said, they're great people. They're everybody's a good shooter on the team there, but they're just fun to be around, encouraging. 2 guys from Pennsylvania. I forget, how could I forget those two? But super encouraging. You know, we have a lot of team chats and a monthly team meeting, and You know, it's been really cool. It feels just, it feels like a family. It feels just real natural. And Phil, you know, Phil's made it that way. He made it from the beginning. He said, you know, he put no pressure on us whatsoever and just wanted us to have fun and be good representatives to the sport and give back where we can. So it's been a great start to the year.
That's awesome. Speaking of your awesome teammates, Tyler wants to know, how far left edge were you holding last weekend?
All the way, Tyler. I was all the way.
How much windage is in that US Optics?
Yeah. So Sunday, I believe it was, I think that would have been stage 17. I was the second shooter there, and it was a troop line, standard troop line, but it only went to 200, I think 194, 197-ish. And the plate wasn't super big, but, you know, we had worked up some wind brackets, and I rolled in a 1 mil for the first target and was adding on to my brackets from there. And my high bracket for the 197 was adding like 1.4. And I ended up needing to be an additional, I was at right at 1.8 when I additional to my 1 mil rolled in. So I was holding 2.8 at 197 or whatever that was. Yeah. And I got off the stage and I did pretty well in that stage. I think I had an 8 out of 10 and cleaned the far target. And so all the guys were like, all right, what were you holding? What are you holding? I said, I had 1 rolled in and 1.8 to the target. And they were like, are you kidding? So I think the next guy got up there and he had to hold 2 full mils extra. So he was holding 3 mils total. So, yeah. So, yeah, Tyler, I was holding all of the wind.
All of the wind.
Yeah.
Todd Anderson's listening. He says he was RO in that stage. It was stage 18 off the trap house.
Yeah. That was it.
All of it.
Yeah. It was cool too, because it, you know, Tyler set that up. Tyler and Eric did a great job of that match, and I really didn't perform very well. I had 2 really rough days, but you know, that's okay. That's, you're not going to perform great every weekend. That's just part of it. But they did a great job of really making us transition, and it was a really good test of your wind reading abilities. And targets were small, but they weren't ridiculously small. They were really a good size, but that stage in particular had some odd numbering to it. And if I remember correctly, you had to shoot target 15 and then target 19, and then you had to go to 16 and then 17 and then 18, but they were in a near to far sequence. So it kind of messed with your head a little bit, just that those numbers weren't near to far. The targets were near to far, but the numbering that you shot them was a little bit different. But 16 was way off to the side there and had a completely different angle. And I dropped both of those on 16. And I think I might have probably put in a little bit too aggressive of a wind angle on that one target, because the rest of them I was connecting with on the same wind bracket. So that one I was just a little bit off on.
That's always fun.
I was going to say thank you, Todd, for RO, and you did a great job.
Tyler said he had to move the far targets in to keep everyone from crying, so be glad he did that.
Oh, yeah. Thank God. Yeah. So that, it was fun. It was a really tough match, but I think anybody who shot that match is a better shooter today because of that. I know I am. I really learned a lot, and I'm glad I made the trip.
Yeah, you know, it's always fun. Sometimes you have those matches where, and, you know, sometimes you have garbage matches, but sometimes you have, you know, a match where you shot really well and you're really proud of yourself. And sometimes you have those matches where you're like, you know, definitely could have done better, but, like, I definitely am not going to do this again. I definitely know how to do this now. And, you know, you have a big list of, you know, things that you're bringing home from it besides for trophies. And sometimes that helps you more in the long run, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I, you know, you definitely, I'm a firm believer, you learn more from your mistakes than you do from your wins. And, you know, I heard a saying that years ago, and I love it. I tell my kids it all the time, you know, the view from the mountaintop is great, but the fruit grows in the valley. So, you know, it's just, it's one of those things you got to go through. And, you know, to be, especially shooting against the level of guys that were there, you know, you can get away at a local match with making a mistake or two here or there and still be okay. But when you're at that kind of a match, you know, for every mistake, you're dropping three or four places easy, you know, and, you know, there was, I think it was, I don't know, there was three or four impacts, you know, separating the top 10 or something like that. So it was real tight. So.
Yeah, those matches are fun ones for sure. So
yeah.
You live full time in an RV now.
Yes, sir, I do.
How does that work out for going to matches? Do you guys kind of have like a home base, or do you just live campground to campground?
Yeah, so I hear a lot of people ask questions about this a lot, and we do have a home base. Ironically, it's 20 minutes from the Clinton House. that was truly by accident. But we were coming here, we were full time, I think, for a couple of months, and we were coming to the Clinton House for a three gun match. And I was gonna stay on the Clinton House property, and long story short, we got in real late at night and tried to set up and put my jacks down on the RV, and it was pretty wet, it had been raining all week, and my jacks sunk in the mud. And you know, I knew that wasn't going to work for leaving my wife there for 5 days while I shot a three gun match. So, I searched and online that night, and after my wife scolded me at about 1 in the morning and said, "This is not what I signed up for." She was not happy with that, but I found us a place that was 20 minutes away and, you know, in a nice resort. And, we came down here and she fell in love with it. And the next day I went to the Clinton House to shoot, and I came back after shooting that night, and she said, "I think I want to buy a place in here." And I was like, "Really?" I said, "Okay, well, I think we could probably work that out." And so we, at the time, both of our kids were playing college basketball, and our son was at a school in Virginia and our daughter was at a school in Alabama. And so this was about 5.5 hours to each of them right here. And of course I was 20 minutes from the Clinton House. So I was like, yeah, we should definitely have a home base. And, you know, it was her idea. It was a good idea that we needed some kind of a home base to go to every now and then. And so, I'm based here out of South Carolina now, and we take the RV when we feel like getting out, and we go, and we're full-time living in the RV. So
do you drive the RV to like every match that you shoot?
Not every match. So as far as that goes, a couple weeks ago, I went up to Boaz, Kentucky, parked right on the range there. It was beautiful, but our daughter was playing in the NCAA Elite Eight that next week. So we were continuing on to that to watch her play. It was her final year of college basketball. We did go to that match with the RV, but a lot of the matches I'll take our Jeep. We tow a Jeep with us, so I'll take that. We also have a Subaru that we leave here at the resort. So if it's a match, if I'm like when I came down to your match a couple weeks ago, I ended up taking the Subaru down there for that. And so it just depends on kind of where the match is. Now I'm the next world qualifier will be in Iowa, and I'll be taking the RV to that. I spoke to them today and I got permission to basically park it right on the range. So, nice. So yeah, I'll actually be driving that one solo. The wife is going to Florida for her mother my mother-in-law's having a knee surgery. So she'll be going down there with her while I go to Iowa with the Black Pearl.
Black Pearl. I like it. So how do you have any sort of practice that you're able to do in the RV, or to, you know, room for dry fire or anything like that? Or do you just got to make the 20 minute trip to Clinton House, which I'm still so jealous of?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I do, when I'm on the road, everything consists of dry fire primarily. If I can find a range, I will, but I haven't been able to find many. I was on the road for 87 days last summer, coming into regionals and nationals. And for those, it was like 16 weeks before nationals, I had shot three times and they were all three matches. That's all it was. I never got any practice session in. Everything else was dry fire in the RV. But I bring in a small 6 foot A-frame ladder that I keep in our basement. We call it the basement underneath the RV. And I'll bring that inside and I'll work five positions with a DFAT. Then I made a tiny little 2 foot tank trap and I'll work off of a tank trap with the DFAT inside the RV. If I, from time to time, if we, depending upon where we're camping and the location, I've actually dry fired outside of the RV. I've been on a farm one time and the owner's like, yeah, go ahead. You can shoot if you want. But I would pick out a tree branch, 150 yards away and say, okay, that's my target. That's my true in bar. And I would dry fire at that. But here at our home base, I still dry fire quite a bit. I'll dry fire 2 days a week and 2 to 3 days a week and live fire 2 to 3 days a week as well. But I have a fortunate where our lot is, it backs up to another piece of property where I'm good friends with the owner. And he loves to shoot and hunt. He's an older fella. And so he's allowed me to put targets out on his property out to, I think, dry fire out to 250 yards. So I got a whole set of targets here that I'll dry fire at actual real distances.
Okay, that's really cool. That's how when I first got into PRS, how I started doing my dry fire practices. I have 450 yards that I could see in my backyard, but at like 452 yards, there's a major highway.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Like I can't shoot, but I could put up, plenty of dry fire targets out that direction. And I was using like plastic, corrugated plastic signs cut to the size of target stuck out there down the power lines.
Oh yeah. Gotta do what you gotta do, right?
Yeah, I mean, it worked. It was
Yeah.
before all these fancy DFATs and DiFATs and this and that and the
Yeah.
other.
Yeah.
I can take a piece of cardboard, poke a hole in it, use a big flashlight, but that was a lot easier.
There you go.
So
Yeah.
you said the RV's name is the Black Pearl?
That is the Black Pearl. We were just trying to think of a catchy name and something that was different, and it's all black and red. And so I was like, how about the Black Pearl? And my wife's like, yeah, I like that idea. So we ended up going, full time. We went full time in June of 2021. So we're coming up on 3 years. And in January of 2022, we got a new dog. And she was a female. And I told my wife, I said, we could name her Pearl from the Black Pearl. And my wife was like, I love it. We're getting her, So it worked out good. So we got Pearl in the Black Pearl.
Nice. So
Yeah.
do you still have your 1050, or is that long gone?
That is long gone. Yeah, I had at one point I had two 1050s, two 650s, and a 450, and now the only thing I have is a 450, and I don't even know why I have that. But that's actually here with me in South Carolina, and haven't used it in a year and a half. I prefer to swipe the credit card, and all of a sudden the ammo fairy shows up a couple days later and says, "Hey, here's 5,000 rounds of ammo."
Yeah, isn't that awesome?
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, it's much faster than pulling that lever.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
Corey, we got a couple of lives.
Oh yeah. Lauren C Cash Cash Cashin, new viewer.
Oh.
Most important question though, really good question. Where's the mustache?
Hey, Lauren. The wife did not prefer the mustache, so the mustache had to go after Yuma. So the guys that were going to Yuma, we definitely from Team MPA, we said, hey, we need to grow some mustaches like 310 to Yuma, and Tombstone and all that. So I was like, yeah, let's go for it. So I can grow a pretty good mustache pretty quickly, and I think it was 4 or 5, maybe 6 weeks. I had some big curls coming up, and so yeah. But the wife was not a fan of that, so I promised her. She said, "Okay, you can grow that, but the second you come back from Yuma, that's going away." And I said, "Okay." So the stash is gone for now.
Tyler presents a different story. He says it blew off last weekend.
Yeah, that could have happened, actually.
Scott Joyner wants to know if you're shooting Cool Acres.
Sunday, yeah. Yeah, I'll be there, Scott. Yes, sir.
Cool.
Excited to shoot. Love that match.
Ben Allreed wants to know if you have a favorite ammo.
Well, I mean, my favorite ammo is the one that is consistent, the most consistent, but I've had a lot of good luck with Lapua. Currently I'm running Lapua long range, and my gun seems to like that 36 velocity lot numbers. So that's what I'm running a lot of. I practice with SK, and I use SK long range for all my practice ammo, and but the Lapua long range is match specific stuff. I don't really practice with that too much other than getting some check and dope and things like that.
Yeah. Greg, I'm going to have to make a call on this one. Anthony can join the chat if he wants to ask questions. Sitting there in the comments, my man.
Oh, boy.
Get in the chat.
Bring in the OG in.
Let's go.
But we did get a live question from somebody named Anthony Ruiz. Never heard of him before?
Never heard of her.
He said, is your daughter going into the WNBA? If so, can he have her autograph?
I'd give you her autograph, buddy, but no, she's not going into the WNBA. She, her last couple of years, she had quite a few injuries. She broke 2 feet three times. The first year, she broke both of them. And then the following year, she broke one of them. And then this last year, she was able to stay pretty healthy. But between that and just, you know, she's had multiple broken bones over the years, and she's not interested in pursuing that right now. So there was some talk of maybe her going to Europe, but to play over there, but I don't think she's really interested in it, to be honest with you. So she's 24 now, and she started when she was six, so she's been doing this for 18 years. So yeah,
breaking bones does not sound fun.
No, but yeah, Anthony, we'll get you her autograph. Anthony remembers her from, well, heck, probably before she had her first college offer, I would say. Anthony knew of her, so
it's awesome. So we're about at the midpoint of the show. Remember, if you're watching us live on Facebook, ask any questions you may have in the comment section of the video, and we'll ask it live on air. Otherwise, to catch us, you can always check back on the Shooter's Mindset Facebook page. The videos stay up there forever, and we usually upload to all the podcast apps the night or maybe two nights after the show. And then finally, everything eventually ends up on the Shooter's Mindset YouTube page, so that's a great place to check up on past episodes.
You're doing great, Greg. They can be two nights after.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Tyler wants to know, how do you keep beating the brakes off of your competitors at your old age?
I am the old man of the team, so I take that back. I think we have one guy who's a couple years older than me, but yeah, I don't know. I guess I get lucky. It's good to, better to be lucky than good. Now, I'm around a lot of good guys. I picked up a lot of good information, and I just seem to apply it as best I can and hope for the best, really. But don't let Tyler fool you. He's been whooping my tail. All them boys have. So it's been an honor to be with on that team with those guys. And there's plenty of other people, other great shooters out there that are just awesome to shoot with as well. And you know, this past weekend, you know, they're peer squatting us. So they squatted us based on your rankings. And, you know, we just had some awesome guys on the squad I was with. And, you know, I just, you know, really enjoyed shooting with them, and just great guys on and off the range. And it seems like that's the people you meet in this sport, and all shooting sports in general seem like, for the most part, they're really good people on and off the range. And, been cool hanging out with them.
So Chris Beck asked, does clean living actually decrease your wind holds?
I don't know. All I know is if it is, you're the cleanest liver I know, Chris. Because this guy, we joke with him, but he's straight up, straight up, straight up. We're all holding the mill. And it's like, what the heck? And he's cleaning the course of fire. So if that's the case, I need to clean things up a little bit, I think. But yeah, great question, buddy.
So, we, as we were mentioning before, you've been friends with Anthony, and for those of the new viewers listening, Anthony is actually the founder of the Shooter's Mindset. He started it way back in 2013, I believe. But there's some story involving y'all two and Tula Ammo that I was supposed to ask about.
Yeah, so that's a funny story. It's kind of an inside joke. That's not super, it's not that funny actually, but especially not for Anthony. But he had been shooting a little bit longer than me. I don't think he was shooting that much longer than me, but he was on to the reloading stage of his shooting career at that point. And I was still brand new. This was like 3 or 4 months after that deer abduction with my wife. And so I had been shooting for, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 months, and just IDPA. And Anthony and I had met, we had met on, I think some, I don't know if it was a Facebook group or what it was, but we had met on the internet somehow with another fella, Steve, and
Tinder.
We all just, I'm sorry.
It was,
yeah,
Grindr,
no,
at the
no.
Time.
Yeah, no. No, it was, I guess it was Facebook, because I don't think I have anything other than that. So I would assume it was Facebook, but yeah, we had met and talked about shooting some matches, and I was like, well, I'd love to shoot. I had a little bit of background in some other sports that I did at a fairly high level. And so I just love that level of competition. And we had all discussed of maybe going to shoot this big IDPA match. So I said, yeah, I'd like to do it. I don't really have any ammo. And the other fellow, Steve, said, well, just go to Walmart and buy some ammo, you know. And Anthony was giving me a hard time that, you know, you're not going to win anything with Walmart ammo. But I didn't know anything from anything. So I said, well, you know, I'll just go to Walmart. And I asked the guy at the counter, hey, I need to get 200 or 300 rounds of 9mm ammo. What do you have? And he said, oh, this Tula ammo is great stuff. Steel case. It's awesome. So I was like, okay, I'll
my
take
man.
It. Yeah. So I showed up to I wouldn't call it a major match, but it was definitely not your weekend, you know, monthly IDPA match. It had 150, 200 shooters in it, and, you know, had to check in the gun box and all that stuff. And Anthony and I were in the same division and classification. And long story short, I ended up beating Anthony. I think he was second, if I recall. And I don't remember how many I beat him by, but he was so mad that he got beat by a guy with Tula ammo from Walmart. Mm-hmm. he was furious with me. So it was kind of the inside running joke forever. So now anytime I see him, I either let him know that he's still the original Hollywood, or I throw up a box of Tula ammo image on his Facebook page. Yeah.
Oh, good times.
That's too funny.
Yeah.
So, like,
yeah, it was
going back to 2013, right? You're looking at mental math 11 years now.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the key to growing shooting is?
The shooting sports?
Yeah, just shooting in general, shooting sports, shooting in general.
Yeah, I think keeping it fun, keeping it accessible, keeping it affordable. I think those are big keys. You know, if I've toyed with the idea of doing some matches up here at the Clinton House, and you know, thinking, you know, if we can give, you know, free entries to juniors. I know a lot of match directors do that because they want to give back to the sport, and, you know, half off for ladies or what have you, and introduction to, you know, that shooting discipline, classes for new shooters, you know, nothing crazy, but, you know, hey, if new shooters want to show up an hour early, we'll give you a quick introduction on some do's and don'ts and try and get you a little more comfortable before the match. I think all those things in general will add to the overall experience for the new shooter, and getting those new shooters out there and getting them hooked to see how fun it is, and having a low barrier of entry, I think, is a big thing. You know, three gun is tough because You got to have three different guns, and you got to have all the gear, you know, all the stuff you need to have. And that's one
Do
thing I
you?
really love. Well, you need three guns. We know that. Right? So,
right. Local match, right? Your first three gun match, how much gear did you borrow, right? I remember borrowing at least three pieces of gear and learning I can't fit 32 in a 30 round team mag.
Yeah, so I got my first three gun match was a pretty funny story, and I ended up coming with three guns and used one of mine.
There you go. Atta boy.
Yeah. And of course I showed up with a 5 round Remington 700 BDL 30-06 with a 4.5 to 14 Leupold on it. That was my hunting rifle.
Nice. Oh, but it had the gold ring, so you know it's
yes,
good.
Yes. That was, and the funny part about it was it was a 5-stage match all in the bays. The longest shot was 35 yards. But, yeah, I didn't know any better, and I showed up with that, and, of course, I borrowed a shotgun from a buddy of mine it was a bird shotgun, beautiful walnut stock, and, you know, they brought me to the line for the very first stage, and they're like, all right, make your pistol ready, so I did it, and they're like, make your shotgun ready. And they're like, they looked at it and they said, you know, you're going to be throwing this thing in dump barrels, right? And I was like, yeah, I'll be careful with it. It's my friend's. So then I pulled out the rifle and they're like, what in the heck? And, you know, so one of the guys, he said, no, to go put that away. You're going to shoot my guns today. And I was like, really? So that day was the first day I ever held an AR in my life. So,
yeah.
So, yeah. But yeah, you could get in and borrow things from friends and stuff like that.
Yeah, like that experience though, right? That's very similar to like my experience getting into three gun. Do you think that it takes people willing to do that? Because you think you're in the sport 11 years now, figure it's, you know, 8-10 from three gun time. That keeps you in the sport longer because you probably still know that guy.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, he's a great friend of mine still, and I saw him a few years ago in Florida. Just an unbelievable guy. Yeah, I think it definitely does. And that level of openness and, hey, man, people they're dying to let you use their stuff. You know, it's like, please, no, use mine. No, use mine. And you see people arguing over whose stuff to use. And, that's something that's very unique and rare. You know, you don't see that, you know, in golf. Hey, man, use my driver. Put that away. You know, you don't see that like that. So, it's definitely rare to our and unique to our sport, and I think it definitely brings you in, like you said, to where you're engaged now. You're engaged more, you know, and it's like you're part of that family, so to speak. So it was definitely a good experience for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what are your personal shooting goals for this year?
So, goal wise, I try and do all my goals to be process-based and not outcome-based. And that sounds boring to most people. They don't get it. But every time I try and compete with an outcome-based goal, I usually fall short because I usually over-try. And I overanalyze and I don't reach that goal. So I've kind of changed up through the years through some mental management classes that, you know, you guys have had all those guys on, but, you know, to make everything more process based. So basically just making that 2025 USA world team, that's going to be a goal, and becoming the process of becoming a world championship level shooter is the ultimate goal for me for this year. So,
okay. When you say process, for those that don't, that haven't followed like Lanny Basham or things like that, can you talk about like a quick example of what you would do in practice kind of leading up to a match that would be, you'd want to improve a process to improve your outcome?
Yeah. So for me, process is a daily thing, and it's not just with shooting, it's every day. So, you know, every morning I'm up at 4:30, 5 o'clock. Okay. And, you know, and I'm getting several things done by 6 a.m. And, you know, it's the same process every day. And by 7 a.m., I'm walking my dog. And by 8 a.m., I'm either dry firing or I'm heading to the range. You know, and so that process to me, like you said, of to improving some area where I'm not strong in, that process is essentially a daily or semi-daily exposure to that weakness. So getting to that range to practice holdovers, or getting to the range to work on footwork, getting to the range to work on speed. You know, there's a lot of people in PRS that don't, at least I think maybe, that don't think speed is important or necessary.
So and it 60-second par time, right?
Yeah. And it doesn't matter how fast you go if you're not getting your misses. And I just can't stand the saying. I might get blasted for this, but I hate the saying, you know, slow is smooth, smooth is fast.
No, love slow it. Is slow. I love screaming that.
Yeah. Slow is just slow. So all you're doing when you go slow is, you're guaranteeing you're not going to get all your shots off. So you're guaranteeing yourself certain amounts of misses when you go slow. Yep. I understand the concept of what they're trying to say, to slow down and be smooth enough to execute and things like that. But I think that there is some value in being able to turn it on when you need to turn it on. I mean, clearly speed isn't hurting Francis Colon any, you know, he's killing it at 24, 25 second, you know, skill stages. So I just think that, you know, if that's something you're working on, then you need to be there fully engaged working on that, you know, not just sending rounds down range as fast as you can, you know. And so for me, when I get to a practice session like that, I want to analyze it. You know, I want to strategize on that stage or that barricade, you know, what's going to be the most efficient footwork wise. I am kind of old, so I don't move so fast anymore. And, you know, so those things are, that's what I'm working on in practice. And, but surprisingly, my practices are very boring and very basic. You know, I do a ton of one shot drills that are just super slow, not even timed. Like, I might take 25 seconds to break a shot. And I do a lot of that, and I do a lot of it on paper. So that's, you know, kind of the majority of my practices. Now, if I notice a weakness, I will specifically address that weakness and work on it at the range and live fire and dry fire as well. But the majority of the things that I'm doing are kind of smoothing them out in the dry fire end of training, and then confirming that I'm doing that correctly with live fire on paper.
Okay.
So Ben asked for a little bit of elaboration on how you would practice speed.
So for speed, I kind of use the standard PRS skill stage. And, you know, now that they've changed to, well, I guess it hasn't changed, but they've made an extra stage, I guess, where it's five positions now on, two targets, five positions. You know, I see a lot of people start and say position one would be low left, and say high left would be two, and then high right would be three, and low right or low right would be four. I see a lot of people do that 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, you know, and I just look at that from a strategic standpoint, and I know that I'm going to lose an extra second and a half just by going to the knee first instead of standing first. Yeah. So I work on that, and I'll work on analyzing those things out. You know, how much time is it going to take me to get up off of a knee again a second time versus ending on that knee, you know? So, you know, for that particular stage, the first time I ran it, I think, you know, that five position, I don't remember what it was, but it was fairly slow. And first time I ran the five position 10 round with two different targets, I think I was in the 45 second range or something like that. And I said, you can get this down to 35, no problem. We just need to work on our footwork and placing the bag correctly, being right on target correctly. A lot of times when I think when I'm slow on that, I'm not having a good target acquisition, which means my NPA is probably off. So those are things I'm working on to increase my speed and be more efficient. I shouldn't say increase, but I should say more efficient. But strategically wise, I think that if you ran that stage and say position two, position one, position two again, and then position three over on the right and drop down and finish in position four, that is the most efficient way you can run that stage. Because you are ending down on the knee, you are starting standing. Now, a lot of guys will want to get that knee position first because they want to get a good wind call. And I get that. And if the wind is that critical where you need to do that, then obviously that's going to trump trying to save three or a second and a half. But if under normal conditions, those are usually generous targets. Normal conditions that, you know, the wind isn't a major factor there, I'm going to take that position two over position one first every single time because it's going to save me a second and a half. And then, so, of course, ending on a knee.
That kind of raises a question about the dichotomy between southeast shooting and out west shooting, right? Where your wind legitimately probably is constant. It's probably left edge. That's why the joke about K&M is always you hold left edge and you'll hit the target. But for matches where you have, you know, 10 to 25 mile an hour winds, do you think skill stages are consistent tests across the country?
No, they're clearly not. That, you know, it's the best that you can do. I mean, the match director can control wind environments, but you're 100% correct. The winds we see here, you know, on this coast, like you said, you know, if we see a 5-6 mile an hour wind in the rimfire world, people are like, oh my gosh, you know,
and, sure.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not saying that it's not a good test of skill and it's not a, you know, something that you can build on, but just in general, they're not like USPSA classifications.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not exactly the same wherever you go in the country. So 2 weeks ago I was in Oklahoma and we had legitimate sustained day one. Anyway, legitimate sustained 22 to 24 mile an hour winds all day.
Yep.
And it was going up to 27. Yeah. I've never shot in anything like that in winds in my life, you know? And so it was a kind of a culture shock, but you know, that one, that skill stage, I literally almost timed out because I was not worried about speed at all. I knew that one more impact was going to be the difference.
You know, so, you shot a tripod rear like I do.
Yeah. Exactly. Actually, that would have been a good idea. I probably should have done that, but we got a couple guys on the team that are the tripod rear kings, and I'm just not one of them. So, but yeah, that, you know, so out there, I think it was a 105 part of time. I think I was like 96 seconds or 93 seconds, but, I just was not even remotely concerned about speed there, you know, just because, like you said, that it's not the same, you know, and I think, you know, like with USPSA, you can look at a stage and say, okay, this is going to be a high hit factor stage, right? And, you know, so time is going to be super critical on that stage. Yeah. It's kind of the same thing to a little lesser degree in this, where I can look at this match and say, okay, it's going to be really windy, man. This, you know, this match is going to be tough. So every impact you get, you need, you know, right. It's going to be tough to come back. And so that was kind of my mindset on that match there.
Yeah. Greg, what do you think about some lives? There's some spicy ones, but I think we're pretty good.
Yeah, send them, I guess.
There's a guy with a beard that said, hi, honey. I'm not sure what that's about.
Is he a redheaded fella from Pennsylvania, maybe?
It's something named Yantosh. I don't know. No, what do you think, Greg? Sure. Greg might be frozen. Yeah. Did we lose Greg?
Can you hear me now?
Just
there you are.
Sorry, there's all sorts of weird stuff going on over here, but yes, I think we're good.
Cool. All right. Well, let's wind it down to shout outs. Doing my best Jen impression. Greg, there's no question who she's calling on first.
Let's thank Hunter's HD Gold. For you know, helping me see all the things and the stuff and all that cool stuff, and PDC Custom for my beautiful little rifle chassis back there.
Awesome. Eric, what do you have for shout outs?
First, just want to thank my wife and family and all my buddies, friends that put up with me and all my nonsense and my crazy questions and texts at 4:30 a.m. And got to thank US Optics. They've been supporting me for 6 years. Great company. Love the optics and never had an issue with them. So super proud to represent those guys. Leofoto Outdoors, Cleanse Oil, of course, Masterpiece Arms. Just shout out to the OG Anthony. And thanks for starting this podcast, buddy. It's been neat to watch it grow over the years, and I don't know, just thankful to be part of groups that I'm with and the people that are in my life, and my wife just yelled, I need to thank give a shout out to Juice Plus. That's been my best sponsor for the last 10 years, so that's her company.
Not oh, nice.
Yeah. So yeah. So when you see me there at the range, and it's got on my jersey, that's what that is. But so yeah, some great companies I've been working with, and super fortunate.
Very cool. Well, obviously, I want to thank you for coming on, spending an hour with us, BSing before the show is great. So thank you very much for coming, and good luck this year.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. It pretty cool. Pretty had a good time, man. So we'll see how the year holds out, and maybe we'll talk again.
Yeah, a bunch of three gunners get together. It's always a good time.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Cool. Well, I think that will wrap up episode 441, and y'all have a good evening.
Thank you.